Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everyone, Laurinella of Baha'i Desert here. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's currently October 11th, 2015, 3:30 p.m. Laurinella of Baha'i Desert is brought to you by Laurinelle Online Marketing. That is my personal online marketing services. I also provide virtual assistant services for those of you who need tasks done over the web, anything that involves a website update, sending emails to clients, whatever it is, you can go to growwithlaurinelle.com to learn more about my services, or you can contact me directly through laurinelle of baha'idesert.com. Also, laurinelle of baha'idesert.com is always looking for sponsors. I really appreciate it. My website has been gaining quite the reputation through social media and also through visitors coming from all over the world. So if you would like to have your services, your business advertised on my website, and if you would also like me to give you a shout-out, then please contact me and I can tell you the options that are available, and it would really make your services look great because I work a lot with the community and they appreciate what I do. So there's a lot of opportunities there. You can go to laurinelle of baha'idesert.com for more information on that. I'm going to kick off the show today with a piece of history. This is coming from a book published by the Arango Basin Historical Society as well as the 29 Palms Historical Society. It's called the Morongo Basin 100-Year Project 1910 to 2010. You can get it at the Old Schoolhouse in 29 Palms. It's only $5, which is a great deal. So the story is coming from 1938. It's a short article, and the title reads, "The Five-Acre Tract Bill Passes Congress." And here's what it says. With the passage of the Small Tract Act of 1938, also known as the Baby Homestead Act, the federal government opened five-acre tracts of public lands to homesteader citizens who paid a $5 filing fee. The land leased for just $1 per acre per year. If after 3 years the jackrabbit homesteader made required improvements by building a minimum 10 by 12 foot structure and passed the government's inspection, he could purchase the land for $10 to $20 an acre. After World War II, the rush was on. City people, weekenders, and people wanting health benefits of the dry desert air filed applications, much as pioneers had raced for the land after the original 1862 Homestead Act. Colonel E.B. Moore set up a shop in Joshua Tree, calling it the five-acre tract capital of the world. He snapped a picture of the 10,001st person signing application papers. The Small Tract Act made an indelible mark on the Morongo Basin. Scattered over the landscape are abandoned shacks that represent in dreams of former landholders, as well as a number of them that have been improved by second and third generation owners. That's probably one of the most fascinating pieces of history in the Morongo Basin, in my opinion, is how the government gave out land at such a cheap price in the earlier days in the 1900s. And so hence now we see all of these abandoned homesteads throughout the desert, and they really become quite a spectacle, especially when driving out towards Amboy and just seeing all these strange little tiny structures. And it's one of my favorite things to learn about. I love the homesteads, and also to see what people have done with homesteads, as it pointed out that people have upgraded the homesteads and added on to them. A lot of homesteads are just getaway locations. Sometimes artists come out here and they'll stay at the homesteads, and they're just beautiful structures, the ones that I have seen that have been upgraded. Interesting to know. Here's some upcoming events happening in the Morongo Basin. There will be a MAC meeting taking place in October. MAC meeting, standing for Municipal Advisory Committee meeting, is taking place on October 12th, 6:30 p.m. This meeting is really important because it's where representatives from the unincorporated parts of the Morongo Basin come together and discuss what's happening in the desert. So we have representatives that come from Pioneer Town, Morongo, Wonder Valley, Yucca Mesa, Joshua Tree. Joshua Tree is unincorporated, believe it or not, as well as other areas. And so here's some background information. There's always a really great presentation. Again, Monday, 6:30 p.m., it's going to be at the Joshua Tree Community Center in Joshua Tree. Speakers include Kirby Brill, Mojave Water Agency General Manager, who will discuss state-mandated restrictions and State Water Resource Control Board. Division of Drinking Water will present information on water supply. Ex-Covalent Chromium, Sean McCarthy, District Engineer for the Division, or Jeff O'Keefe, Region 5 Chief Engineer for the Division, will be there for presentations and discussion. So generally, the presentation is about the water in the area and information about contamination from chromium. So it should be really interesting. I encourage you to attend. Here's another event happening, and this event has been getting a lot of publicity from all kinds of conservation organizations in the Morongo Basin. It is the public meeting for California Desert Public Lands, where Senator Feinstein will be speaking at, and it will be taking place on October 13th, starting at 2 p.m. at the Whitewater Preserve in Whitewater. And before I get into this, I just want to let you know that it is asked that you RSVP to this event online. If you go to laurenlofthehighdesert.com, you can go to my event section and you will see this event listed, and there's a link there to RSVP. But it's also noted that there's limited parking, so there are bus rides being offered in Yucca Valley if you would like a bus ride there. This is recommended since it will be easier for people to get to the location. From what I've heard, the bus will be leaving at 12 on Tuesday the 13th, and it will return. So please RSVP and get on the bus. Here's some detail about this meeting. On October 13th, Senator Dianne Feinstein will be holding a public meeting to discuss the designation of Mojave Trails, Sands to Snow, and Castle Mountains as national monuments. In attendance will be Department of Interior Deputy Secretary Mike Connor, Undersecretary of Agriculture Robert Bonney, and other senior officials from the Obama administration. Can we count on you to attend and be a voice for the California Desert's remarkable public lands? Again, RSVP at the link. It will be in Whitewater. The public will have a chance to speak at this event, so please come prepared to voice your opinion on why protecting these special areas is so important. For information, you can click on a link that, again, is available on my website. And really quick, I just want to include some information that came from the Morongo Basin Conservation Association. They are very supportive of this meeting and will be there in attendance. So they sent out a newsletter about the event on October 9th, and I just want to read through it very quickly for you. This is coming from Sarah Kennington, who is the president. The previous e-blast brought you up to date on efforts to secure needed conservation protection for the lands in the California desert. Senator Feinstein has now requested President to establish three new national monuments, Sand to Snow, Mojave Trails, and Castle Mountains. MBCA is joining our conservation partners to encourage you to attend the public meeting hosted by Senator Feinstein at Whitewater Preserve on Tuesday, October 13th. To discuss the designation of the monuments. As stakeholders in the region, our presence is important to show strong endorsement of these desert monuments. For those of you willing, please also express your sentiments publicly. Deputy Secretary of the Interior Mike Connor, Undersecretary of Agriculture Robert Bonney, and other senior administration members will be in attendance. Let them know what we feel. These lands are not adequately protected and deserve the protection that will be secured with monument status. As residents who live, recreate, and make our livelihoods here, we will be directly affected by these land use decisions. Our voice will matter. Danielle Figuera, Executive Director of the Mojave Desert Land Trust, has written, "We now have a unique opportunity to honor decades of cooperation, outreach, and commitment to support and protect the California desert for current and future generations. These lands deserve designations that recognize their scenic, ecological, cultural, and economic importance." Again, please RSVP. It is said that the members of the Morongo Basin Conservation Association will be on the buses. Background information will be provided on the bus that you may use to prepare a strong public comment to deliver to the decision makers at the meeting. You will also find information about these special places and efforts to protect them at the Campaign for California Desert website. Please attend. Again, this is getting a lot of publicity in the area. There's a lot of support coming from local residents. On October 14th, there will be a lecture which is hosted by the Morongo Basin Historical Society. It's starting at 5:30 p.m. and taking place at the High Desert Cultural Museum in Yucca Valley. The topic is Joshua Tree National Park and the rest of the story. Join us at the High Desert Nature Museum, 5:30 Yucca Valley. The speaker is Joseph Starkey, author and retired ranger of Joshua Tree National Park. They're asking for a donation of $5. And Joseph Starkey, local author and retired Joshua Tree National Park ranger, will speak at the Morongo Basin Historical Society Second Wednesday Lecture Series. This extra edition of his 2015 book, Images of America, Joshua Tree National Park, Joe continues the story of the park with additional photographs and interesting stories unpublished in the book. Starkey will be there to sign books. And here's the final event that I have for you. There's a lot more events coming up, however, so I encourage you to go to my website just so that you can see what's coming up. The Morongo Basin Historical Society will be hosting an Old Woman Spring Road Ranch Tour taking place October 17th, starting at 11 a.m. And so this should be a really great event to learn about the history there. Member donations are $15. Non-members are $25. You can contact Lori at 760-363-6681. If there's something that I don't have on my calendar that should be there, please let me know. You can email me at laurenlhighdesert@gmail.com or email me directly through my website at laurenlofthehighdesert.com. Here's some news coming from me. Recently I added a new section to my website, laurenlofthehighdesert.com. It is labeled as resources. And I added this because I want to develop a library on my website over time. I have stumbled upon so many articles through the local Facebook groups and through searches and things like that coming from the Desert Sun and other publications and environmental groups. These articles, I read them and then I tend to not save them and they get lost. And so I figured I will begin this resources section on my website so that I can put the articles in one place and I will have them organized according to what the subject is. So Eagle Mountain recently has been getting a lot of press and a lot of coverage because of the discussion of adding that territory back to Joshua Tree National Park. There's been various articles that have been published about it, and so that's one topic that I want to begin recording the articles that I come across on about. Another thing is Dollar General. I would like to start listing those articles as well. The solar projects here in the desert are very fascinating, and so to have those articles listed in one place would be very beneficial and educational for people who live here and people all over the world, really. So if you come across an article that you feel covers these developmental subjects really well, if it's a well-researched article or it covers something important, then you're welcome to email it to me, and I will put it on my website. Otherwise, I'm personally keeping my eyes open for these websites. So feel free to go to the resources section when you have time. I recently attended an old schoolhouse lecture series that took place on October 9th at the old schoolhouse in 29 Palms. And the presentation was called Old Magic, Lives of the Desert Shamans by Nick Clapp. This is actually also a book published by Nick Clapp. Again, Old Magic, Lives of the Desert Shamans. You can actually find it on Amazon and you can buy it. He is a resident of Borrego Springs, closer to the Salton Sea. So he's relatively close, and he has a lot of interesting stories about that region and as well as history in this area. He gave a lot of great information about shamans. I personally was very uneducated about the topic. So he did mention that desert shamans were natives, and they primarily worked directly with native people to cure illnesses. Whenever someone had an illness, first they would go to an herbalist in the community, and she would make some kind of tincture to try to treat the illness. But if that didn't work, then people would call on the shaman. The shaman was perceived as a very important person. He could cure illness. Spirit spoke through the shaman. And so that was what they primarily did, was cure people. And it was interesting. It was said that if he was unsuccessful in curing someone three times, he would be murdered. So it was a very serious job and very task, important task to take on. It was mentioned that it's difficult to really trace what shamans did and how they lived because there's so much little information about it. But based on hieroglyphs that are found all throughout the Western Desert region in the United States, there is some information that's been brought together to explain the shamans. And it was said that people believed spirits could speak through shamans, that shamans were really on a spiritual journey, and they would be here on Earth, and they would go on this journey where they would leave the Earth, their spirit would, they would go to the land of death, and then they would obtain power there and return and be reborn on the Earth. And when they were reborn, they would have an animal spirit with them, or a spirit helper who would speak through them and give them the abilities to cure people. It was mentioned that when the Spaniards began coming to the western region of the world, began coming to North America and South American regions, that there was very intense illnesses introduced, the measles and other illnesses. And so tribal people called on the shaman to cure these illnesses, but these illnesses were so aggressive that no way to cure them. The shamans were very unsuccessful. And so over time, the shamans were murdered because of the high death rate, and they really were no longer effective in curing people. And it was mentioned that shamanism has been pretty much stamped out almost completely in the United States ever since the 1920s. But shamanism can still be found in Africa, parts of South America and Australia, as well as other parts of the world. It does still exist, but here in the United States, there's very little information about it, and it's really difficult to find it all nowadays. So that was really fascinating. I love the old schoolhouse lecture series because they bring a lot of culture and history into their lecture series, and so it gives this more, in my opinion, personal touch to the desert, and we get to see beyond what we're typically exposed to, in my opinion. It's a really great lecture series, so I encourage you to look up the old schoolhouse lecture series and attend whenever you have a chance. Also, another big event that went on recently was the Orchid Festival in Landers that took place at Gubler Orchids on Saturday, October 3rd and 4th. I personally attended Saturday, October 3rd. And this was a lot of fun, actually. It was the 20th annual Orchid Festival. It's been going on for a long time. Gubler Orchids has been here for a long time. Just to look into the history of Gubler Orchids is really interesting. But there was the highlight at the event would be the hot air balloon ride. I actually went, and right when I got there on Saturday, the hot air balloon had just gotten up. And that was what I wanted to do, was get on this hot air balloon ride. So it was a tethered hot air balloon ride. You could purchase a ticket to get on for $10. And how it worked was you would get on into the basket, and the balloon would rise maybe 25 feet maximum, and then it would just come down. And all this happened in less than 5 minutes. It was still a lot of fun, and it was really cool to have an aerial perspective of the Integratron. I really thought that was great. Another highlight, of course, are the orchids themselves, very beautiful, and very many different kinds of orchids. There's some information that I heard through Z1077, which was that the majority of the orchids that are found at major retailers, such as Home Depot and Lowe's, the majority of the orchids come from Gubler Orchids. So I thought that was really fascinating because personally, when I'm at the facility in Landers, it doesn't stand out to me as a huge facility. They do have two very large greenhouses, or it might be four that are just connected, but it's interesting that they're one of the primary suppliers of orchids throughout the United States. And so it was mentioned that if you buy an orchid at Home Depot, there's a possibility that you could be buying one that's coming from Landers. It was also mentioned that over $20,000 was raised for local organizations in the area, which is very cool, and I'm very glad that that happened. There were all kinds of local organizations there, from the Seroptimists of Yucca Valley to water districts and the Morongo Basin Humane Society. And so it was really cool to see everyone come out to the Orchid Festival. It was a lot of fun, and I hope you can visit the Goobler Orchids. You can go anytime. You don't have to go only when the festival is going on, but go check it out, and it's just something really interesting to see out here in the desert, something that you wouldn't expect to come across. And it's right down the street from the Integratron, so you can make it a double deal. Go to Goobler Orchids, and if you are there and you can make an appointment at the Integratron and check it out, and that will be a really cool day. So here's some stories I want to brief over really quick, coming from Z1077 and High Desert Star. So, okay, here's a story I thought was interesting. Z1077 published it. I'm going to read through it really quickly. Published on October 7, 2015, the article is titled Cadiz Water Project Gets a Major Setback. And here's what it says. The Cadiz Pipeline Project, which would tap an aquifer in the Cadiz Valley and move 16 billion gallons of water annually to coastal California, received a setback last week. The U.S. Bureau of Land Management said in a letter dated October 2nd that Cadiz can't use an existing railway for the 43-mile water pipeline. Opponents of the project said that Cadiz was using the railway as a way to get around the need for environmental review of the project. The BLM said in its letter that the water pipeline needs its own right-of-way over federal land, which would require an expensive and lengthy review process. Cadiz plans to sell the water to the Santa Margarita Water District, 200 miles away, which would supply 100,000 homes in Orange and Los Angeles counties. Water sales could bring Cadiz $1 billion to $2 billion in revenue over 50 years. Cadiz has admitted that it would be drawing more water from the aquifer than would be replenished by natural means. Cadiz has said it will consider all legal remedies, including a federal lawsuit against the BLM administrative determination. That's an update on the Cadiz project, which has been getting coverage here and there from what I've seen. Here is a story coming from the High Desert Star, and it was published on October 7, 2015, titled Marine Base Releases Tortoises into the Wild. A 9-year-old desert tortoise known as 2-4 crawled out of its burrow to explore its new home after being released into the desert last week. Tortoise 2-4 was the last of 35 tortoises released into the wild in the past 2 weeks on board the 29 Palms Marine Corps Ground Combat Center. It was the first time the Tortoise Research and Captive Rearing Site, or TRACRS, tracers has released tortoises back into the wild from their head start facility in the Sandhill area of the Combat Center. The biggest and best habitat for desert tortoises to survive. This 6-acre property holds five 100 by 150 foot pens where more than 400 young desert tortoises are being reared to be released back into the wild. More stories coming from the local news. This is coming from Z1077, published on October 9th, 2015, and the title is Pneumonia Threatens Joshua Tree National Park Bighorn Bighorn Sheep. And here's what it says. Joshua Tree National Park rangers are closely watching the bighorn sheep in the park after a lamb died from pneumonia in August. Park spokesman George Land said the first report of a sick and coughing bighorn sheep was reported in early May, and the sick lamb, who died shortly after being found in the Hall of Horrors, died in mid-August. A necropsy confirmed the lamb was infected with pneumonia, which has a 50 to 90% mortality rate. There is no vaccine and no cure. Bighorn sheep contract pneumonia from contact with domestic sheep and goats, which carry the disease. Land said there are homesteads bordering the park which have sheep or goats. Residents are cautioned not to release domestic animals into the wild. A pneumonia outbreak in bighorn sheep can cause a long-term decline in the population that can last more than a decade. Land said the 200 to 300 sheep in Joshua Tree National Park are in several herds which mix and mingle. He added that as far as the park officials know, only one sheep has died from pneumonia. Park officials are part of an interagency task force to monitor outbreaks, suggest best practices for limiting the range and effects of the disease, and provide recommendations on how to manage the outbreak. We keep track of that. Okay, and I'm going to close off my show with one final story, which I think some of you may be interested to know about. And it's, again, coming from Z1077, published October 8, 2015. And the title is 1,200 Pounds of Unwanted Prescription Drugs Turned In. Here's what the article reads. During the 10th Nationwide Prescription Drug Take Back Day, the Morongo Basin Sheriff's Station received 26 pounds of unwanted prescription drugs. More than 1,200 pounds of expired and unwanted prescription drugs were turned into 10 county sheriff's department stations on Saturday, September 26th. The most drugs, 481 pounds, were delivered to the Yucaipa station. Barstow received the fewest at 10 pounds. Residents are urged to turn in their unused drugs as flushing them down the toilet or throwing them in the trash pose potential safety and health hazards. I wish I knew about this because I have some old drugs personally hanging around, and I've been keeping a hold of them because I know that we're not supposed to dispose of them by throwing them in the trash. There is, again, there's this method of turning in your drugs to whoever is collecting it, but I was not aware of this nationwide prescription drug take-back day, so that's something to mark down. If you are trying to get rid of your prescription drugs, mark that down so you can keep track of it for next time. There's a lot of events that go on to collect waste, such as the prescription drugs, also technology, electronics, things that we're really not supposed to just throw out in the trash. There are organizations and groups that collect these waste products because they get rid of them in a more environmentally friendly way or a more responsible way. So just something good to know. Okay, that's all I have for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope all of you have a great week. If there's anything that I need to cover, anything that I should discuss on my website or on my broadcast, then please let me know. You can go to laurenlofthehighdesert.com and find all the information there. I really appreciate you tuning in, and I appreciate your feedback. Thank you so much.